Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, what's that football group is doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
Let's send you out on the right note. PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelizzolo, Sam Monson, live on YouTube. And we have a very special guest that we're going to get to in just a second. But first, as a busy parent, you want to give your kids a head start in their financial future. But investing can often be both confusing and time-consuming. Fabric by Gerber Life makes it easy for you to set up an investment account for your child that grows with them and helps prepare for their financial future. Fabric by Gerber Life was designed by parents for parents to make it easy to plan for and manage your family's financial path. With a UGMA account from Fabric, you can start investing in your child's future today. UGMA stands for Uniform Gifts to Minors Act. While your kids can invest while they're minors, a UGMA account allows you to invest on their behalf and gives their investments more time to grow. So join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Start investing in your child today at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/PFFNFL. Portfolio is managed by Fort Washington Investment Advisors, Inc. Additional services provided by Apex Clearing Corporation. All investing is subject to risk. Monthly minimum contribution required. Learn more at meetfabric.com. All right, Sam, we have a very special guest here today, former co-host of the PFF NFL podcast. It's the late Mike Renner. Welcome back, Mike.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me, guys.
You're nice. Alive and well. We always refer to our former PFFers as the late or rest in peace, but you're really here.
Well, yeah, not great timing with that. We talked about pre-show. Maybe sooner than later. Maybe I need some fabric, actually, after what's going on with my stomach here.
All right. Well, thoughts and prayers to you for your doctor's appointment today. You should go to meetfabric.com and maybe take care of your future there. What are you up to these days? What's going on?
Nothing. I mean, I was on the Bleacher Report draft show. You may have seen me and Micah Parsons and CJ Stroud.
Nice.
I let them do the heavy lifting there on that one. But I have a job here coming up soon. Should I announce it on the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because currently we have you listed as unemployed right now. So
okay. Well, I'll be working with – I start at CBS next week, so I'll be working with CBS next – I'll be there for a while, actually, three years ago. So
that's
I'll
awesome.
CBS for a while. That's
congratulations.
Great. Congrats, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike Renner, no longer unemployed, as it says at the bottom.
There we go.
Future CBS analyst.
Boom.
You going to be on the NFL today? You know, there was a lot of turnover there.
It's true.
You're probably just going to step right in.
Not yet. Maybe in time. We'll see. I got the high aspirations. Not necessarily NFL today, but we're trying to make some plays on the draft side of things.
If you were replacing one of the people there, which character would you take over? Are you more Phil Simms or are you Boomer?
Should replace JJ Watt, to be honest.
Boomer. What was that of?
JJ Watt. You should replace JJ Watt in his analysis.
Yeah. He's obviously not as deep in the weeds as we are in the football analysis game. So, yeah, probably JJ.
Yeah, there you go. See?
If you could just confront him on it, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
You don't even need to replace
him. I'm good for that.
You can just take him on from
you
the
guys,
inside.
If you guys can fight that fight, I'm out the game.
It's easier to confront from here, you know, not in person.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Mike, we figured we're going to prolong this draft thing as long as we can. Sam, you wanted to discuss more player fits, and we'll get some of your takes, talk about your Bo Nix love and everything. But, Sam, I'll let you kick it off. talking a little draft fit as we're still recapping this thing.
Yeah, I think a good way of using Mike would be to, now that we know where some of these guys have been drafted, instead of rehashing the same conversations we've been having, let's focus on how they actually fit with the team that's been drafting them, particularly for the ones where it's either an unusual skill set player or, you know, a strange connection. But let's start with Bo Nix. You know, you were particularly high on Bo Nix relative to everybody else. He goes to Denver, which I think was the one team pretty much everybody was connecting him to the whole way along. So how do you like this Bo Nix in a Sean Payton offense connection, Mike?
I mean, it couldn't be better for him. Now, obviously, they need to make some improvements to the offensive line. The weapons there are still iffy. But that was the best fit schematically for him because it's what he was the best at in college, right? Like, that was very similar to the Oregon offense, looked like a lot of what Drew Brees did at his peak for the New Orleans Saints, and like all the things he kind of got hated on, where it's like, oh, he only throws underneath, oh, he's a check down artist. Well, it's like, what did Drew Brees do for the last 6 years of his career, right? Like, it was not a deep downfield attacking offense there, but it was an offense that just required it to be out on time to the right guy. And more often than not, you know, you'll put up the stats that Nix did this past fall without having that part to your game. So I do get the questions about where Bo Nix's ceiling can push, but his ceiling can push pretty high in that offense. Like in that offense specifically, I do think that he is uniquely adept at running a lot of things that Sean Payton wants to do.
Were you surprised when you saw Bo Nix at Oregon after what happened at Auburn, you know, just as a casual observer and then seeing the two different playing styles in his career?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, it didn't make any sense. And like, I was surprised not only the very first time watching Bo Nix tape, so back this first year at Oregon, being like, wow, that was like a big leap. But then also this past year, I was like, wow, that was another big leap. You know, like even from year one at Oregon to year two, I was like, he really continued to improve and added some things to his game and really took away the negatives. And I think that's the thing that got really underrated with Nix, was he didn't take sacks and he didn't have a lot of turnover. Like, he didn't even put the ball in harm's way at all this past year. And you can, you know, criticize, you know, the offense for that. Obviously, you have to take away like 100 screens that he threw to really accurately compare him to other quarterbacks in this class. But like, however you wanted to slice it, and I really felt like, you know, all the things that Sean Payton was saying afterwards, where it's like, we looked at throws 10 plus yards downfield, where it's like, well, I looked at throw, you know, when he watches him like really attacking down the football field, he's not really making bad decisions. And there was just, I really felt like Payton, where I was like, the more I watched, the more I'm like, I can't be the only one seeing this. Turns out I kind of was the only one. Not a lot of people were as high on him as I was. But I do just think that the only things that there are to dislike about him, I'm not necessarily, aren't really the things that are going to worry me in terms of projecting the NFL. There's a lot really to like in terms of at least his floor once he gets to the league.
What about, so the other quarterbacks that got drafted, I think, mostly are in the situations that people expect them to be in, or not ones that I think have a ton of interest in terms of the fit. What about Jaden Daniels in that Washington offense, which itself, I think, is something of a question mark, because Cliff Kingsbury coming back, who knows what exactly that offense is going to look like after his little sabbatical outside of the league?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is, we hope it doesn't look like what it looked like in Arizona, right? But I do think of like Jaden Daniels is uniquely qualified to run what, you know, Kyler Murray was doing in Arizona, like a lot of go balls, a lot of hitch routes. Like that was LSU's offense last year too. And he was the best go ball thrower in this class, at least this past season. He was awesome at that. And so he has some receivers that can win at that level of football field, like De'Ami Brown, Terry McLaurin, those are go ball guys that can win those routes. So I do think that can work. That's why I said a lot about Jaden Daniels throughout the process. I was like, if you really buy into his legs, buy into the rushing threat that he has, and then let him attack down the football field when the numbers get heavy in the box and you get those one-on-ones on the outside, that could be a lot of explosive plays in an offense. Like, that can be a high-level offense, even if, you know, people are criticizing for not using the middle of the football field, whatever. You don't necessarily have to when you have what he has physically. So I thought it was perfect. Like, I can see why Cliff Kingsbury was so high on him. And like all the reports were like, this was Cliff Kingsbury's guy, his QB1 in the class, even over guys like Caleb Williams. I can see why. So I do think that's a good fit for him. Now, I wish they would have drafted like one offensive lineman after they drafted him. But, you know, that's a problem that was going to be there even if they drafted a rookie somewhere.
Right.
You and I talked during the season, and you were high on Drake May. Drake May as a QB1 potential and – I don't know if you were coming off that. Where'd you end up landing on May, and did you sour on him like other analysts did down the stretch?
I had a 1A, 1B with him and Caleb, pretty much. I think both are franchise quarterbacks. I think Caleb, I didn't necessarily sour on May more than I was just like, I think Caleb's just got it. Like, by the end of the day, after seeing him deal with what he had to deal with this past fall, and, you know, there were bad games for sure, but it's like, he is so gifted that what it could be at the top end is just not worth passing up, in my opinion. But May, it's like, May is not far away. If you told me in, you know, 5 years, May is a top three quarterback in the NFL, like, he has that level of tools as well. So I was a big fan of him. You go up and flip on his tape, and I felt really good about his projection in the NFL because every week it was him. You know, they could go out, you know, Jaden Daniels could go out, even Bo Nix could go out and have some playmakers like take over the game. Drake May didn't have that. If they wanted to go out and win a game, it really had to come from him attacking down the football field. And I love, you know, I don't love the situation that he's going to in New England. It's obviously going to be a multi-year rebuild, but I love that he just like, he, no matter what, seemed to win the fourth quarter, keep his head above water. Like, he was not a guy who spiraled into multiple bad decisions in a game when things were going south on him. And I think that was the biggest thing from the first year start to the second year, is he really didn't, you know, he did throw like, what, 9 picks, but he didn't actually put the ball in harm's way a lot. And I loved how he, you know, when he took chances down the football field that weren't necessarily open, but they were NFL open, he was giving his guys a chance to make plays, even if he didn't really have playmakers that were capable of finishing those plays.
All right, landing spot is so important for wide receivers. We talk all the time pre-draft, and we just rank these guys in a vacuum, even though we're comparing giant, you know, big slots, X receivers, slot guys, like all these kinds. We just put them in a hopper together and put rankings together. Now we've seen where these guys have actually landed. I think there's a couple of really interesting landing spots to talk about. The first one I want to hit is Brian Thomas Jr. in the Jags offense. So what's your initial reaction to that fit, and generally Brian Thomas Jr., what he can be in the NFL?
I think it's exactly what Trevor Lawrence has been missing throughout his career. You know, when you go back to Clemson days and what he did so well with T. Higgins and the other wide receivers there, like the back shoulder and the go balls. Like, that was a big part of Clemson's offense, and Trevor Lawrence was very adept at throwing those routes and giving his guys a chance to make plays. And look at Brian Thomas Jr.'s tape, and it's like go balls and hitches. And it's like this, that exact route tree. I think it was like 75% of his yards.
Yeah.
I think Scott Barrett tweeted were on goes and hitches. And it's like, that, and I think he kind of got underbilled in terms of how much a project Brian Thomas is. Like, I don't think he's a day one complete wide receiver, but it's definitely a skill set that the Jags have not had. They tried to address that with Gabe Davis, but like, objectively, Brian Thomas is an element on that route tree than even Gabe Davis is. So I think they're trying to build around Trevor Lawrence more so than they ever have before, because they gave him a bunch of these, you know, midget slot receivers that forcing him to work in the middle of the field when that's not really ever been his game. His game has been throwing into tight windows, and hopefully now they have guys that can make plays in that, in those areas.
Are you at all concerned that the first round guy, like, where, so in that offense, where's the number one dude? You know, they've got a whole bunch of these guys now that actually all seem to be vertically oriented, like Brian Thomas Jr. Gabe Davis is sort of a poor man's version of that in free agency beforehand. Even Christian Kirk is best running vertically from the slot. Like, where is just the number one receiver to work with?
That is the concern. And I do think, you know, it's third down, you see man coverage. Yeah, Kirk, you're probably going to, but I don't know if I'm trusting any other guy in that receiver room. So I still, you know, I questioned that when they signed Gabe Davis, but where they're at in the draft, that's probably the shot I would have taken for them, just because of what he could be, the upside of Brian Thomas Jr. And what he could be in that offense. But he's still, like, his skill set's going to be more like a DK Metcalf than a true number one. I still don't think they have like a true number one in that offense, but hopefully they can piece it together by, you know, having right. Three guys that can maybe do a certain thing well.
We had many debates on the show about Keon Coleman and just him as a prospect, and then of course what the Bills are going to do at receiver. The one of the bigger stories of the draft, they're trading down, the Chiefs coming up to get Xavier Worthy, the Bills finally get their guy, which is Keon Coleman. Sam, you've got some pretty strong takes on Coleman, but Mike, I want to know where you landed on Coleman as a player and then his fit with the Bills.
I liked him as a player. I thought as a big slot in this draft class, he was probably – I thought he was going to be really good in the NFL. I think he could have been like a Michael Thomas in the right scheme, where you're running him on slants, you're running him on option routes, and he gets that little bit of separation, great ball skills, great hands, is going to secure all those plays. Easy money. Almost like how, you know, like Travis Kelce gets used nowadays for the Chiefs, where it's just like that guy knows how to work the middle of the football field, has good hands. And then if he just develops a rapport with quarterback, he can go off. Now, for Buffalo, they have like a zillion guys in that mold already. Like they signed Curtis Samuel, who does that. They have Khalil Shakir, who's been a slot through his career at Boise State and with the Bills. And it's like, man, they needed the guy who was kind of the route runner on the outside. And I'd just never seen that from Keon Coleman, even dating back to his time at Michigan State heading into the year, to think that that's what he can be, to like be a one-to-one Stephon Diggs replacement or even like a Gabe Davis replacement. So I am worried about, you know, of all the receiver fits that were kind of in the top 50 that we saw, that was one where after the fact I was like, ooh, I don't know if I see it, but I don't know. I buy into the guy. The guy's going to figure it out, I think. And I think everyone's buying into the guy right now.
Yeah. I mean, he's like the PFT had a tweet that he's been like, he's a plant by the Bills social media team to just generate clips. And honestly, it would work if it was. But they've already come out and said that he's going to play X receiver for them. Now, look, all those guys move around. Like Stephon Diggs spent 30% of his snaps in the slot. So it's not like he'll never be used where you want him to be used. But that to me is terrifying. Like they've sort of come out and said, yeah, his primary role, even if it's only 2/3 of his time, is exactly the last thing you want him doing, in my opinion. Like Matt Harmon had the same take. I had the same take. You've identified the same thing. He's a big slot. That's where he wins. And he doesn't win separating on the outside against man coverage, which sounds like exactly what they're going to ask him to do right off the bat. It just feels like a situation where he's kind of getting set up to fail.
The one thing I will say is that he also didn't really get a ton of chances on true like go balls. And now for a guy like that, when you're only 4'6", you're never going to blow past a corner, right? Like any plays you make in that regard are always kind of got to be at the catch point, or you just got hip to hip leverage and a guy puts it on you. So he'll have a better quarterback at finding him on theoretically what he could be doing well on the outside. But that just never was the case at Florida State. So I guess there's still like some TBD aspect to parts of his game as a true X receiver.
Right.
Do you have any other fits you were wondering about?
I mean, for wide receiver, I think there's a ton of them. What do you make of Xavier Leggett being the guy in Carolina, not just the sort of answer at wide receiver for them, but somebody they traded up to secure the fifth-year option on to make sure of that?
So at least they were saying after the fact the right things about how to use him. I don't think he's also the answer, though, for what they need in that offense. Now, more speed, more vertical ability, but, man, I like just that you worry about the profile for a number of manners. One is just that it's like without full route tree guy. And anytime you're not a full route tree guy projecting the NFL, that's always scary, where it's like he is a over route, go route, slant route, try to run him on a dig, blaze out, any other things. He's not getting open. And then at the line of scrimmage, you know, he's big and strong and like that can project to the NFL in a number of ways, but I thought he did not get off press well at all. I thought when guys got his hands on him, he really struggled to hit his landmarks and be a precise route runner. And then it's like, yeah, he developed over the course of his career and had a big breakout, but it was also in year five, and you do worry about the guys who needed that physical advantage to dominate at the collegiate level. And he kind of, you know, that's why you worry about the Josh Doctsons of the world, the guys who it's really late in their career before they finally figure it out. So he takes a lot of like red flags, but it's also something that they just didn't have a speedy downfield threat last year. Now you have, and you maybe say you have the separator in Deontay Johnson, or maybe say you definitely have the separator in Deontay Johnson who can get open. And that's what you wanted in your offense. But that was, on my board at least, the single biggest reach of the first round. So I do worry about, and I said the same thing about Jonathan Mingo last year. You know, I had Jonathan Mingo outside my top 100, and I was like, that's just, it takes a lot of things that you just worry about for a wide receiver, you know, not being able to take the next step to the NFL. And well, his rookie year was a little bit of struggle. So I think there could be similar issues with Xavier Leggett, even if I do think at least his usage will be correct there, or they'll use him in a manner that can be conducive to a skill set.
Where did you land on the edge rushers? We debated those guys quite a bit here, but Laiatu Latu, Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, and then, of course, Chop Robinson ends up pretty close to those guys. How are you sorting out those edge rushers?
I had Latu 1, Turner 2, Verse 3, Chop 4. I kind of saw it more as like, I would like Latu or Turner. Like if someone's going to develop into like an elite guy in this class, I think it's those, one of those two. And so for the Vikings, when they made that like big trade up, I was like, you know, I see it. Yeah, I think that's a guy in a lesser class that goes in the top 10, like fairly comfortably in most years is the top 10 pick. So understandable with that. But I just think Latu is just, you don't see guys that skilled, and guys that skilled just tend not to fail. And yeah, he wasn't an elite athlete, but he was still a plus athlete for a guy his size. So I'm just a big fan of his. I saw Verse as more of, he's not that polished, and to be 23 going on 24, not that polished. And again, you know, he started at Albany, whatever, but it's just a little more worrisome to me, even if I think he's going to be a solid NFL player because he's such an explosive, powerful dude off the edge. But I think he's going to be kind of like a bull rush only guy-ish at the next level, or could be. And then Chop Robinson, I was just like, man, how many guys that look like that, that are that athletic, end up failing in the NFL? It just, maybe it's not year one that it happens, and maybe he's never a run defender, high-end run defender, but I think that guy's going to figure it out at some point. He's just so athletically gifted that it's the light switch is going to flip on.
How much do you like the fit of Dallas Turner going to Minnesota in particular? Because Steve made a big deal from multiple teams, actually, of Turner's basically the only guy in this class that had high-end play and also experience of dropping into coverage. And with that defense and Brian Flores, you know, they were either rushing 3 or 6. So all these guys had to be able to drop into coverage and at least occupy a space. And he's the one with experience of doing that.
Yeah, I do think the fit could not have been too much better for him because of that. Like, he's going to get a lot of schemed up looks in Flores' blitz heavy scheme. And then he's also versatile in that regard, and also goes to a place where Jonathan Gennard's there, one of the more skilled hands rushers in the league. TJ Stroud was on the show saying how much he helped Will Anderson last year in his transition to the NFL. Getting a guy like that who's a veteran, who's like a much different type of rusher, who has to win with purely, he's not physically, nowhere near the physical freak that Dallas Turner is, and has to win via skill. You get to be in the same building as that guy to give you, kind of show you the ropes of how to do it. I think that's also an underrated aspect of the fit as well. So yeah, that was, I mean, obviously he didn't want to fall to 17. I think he would have loved to go number 8 overall, where everyone was kind of mocking him pre-draft, but if you're going to go fall, that was probably the best team for him to fall to.
What was the reaction on the Bleacher Report show when Michael Penix Jr. comes off the board at pick 8? Especially with a couple NFL players there, right?
Yeah, I mean, so CJ liked him, and he was, like, floored, too. He was like, yeah, I like him, but no one thought it. You know, people were like, okay, maybe the Raiders, but even that seemed like smoke. You know, like the Bo Nix, the Broncos, Penix, the Raiders, it's like, okay, yeah, maybe, like, day 2, people were thinking. So floored, could not believe, like, it just, everyone else's reaction. I as a Packers fan, I can't like hate on the thought process. It's if he works out 4 years from now, no Falcons fan is going to be upset about it at all. But it just, the timing feels weirder than anything, you know, any of the decisions the Packers ever made with Love and Rodgers, in terms of just like, man, why give Kirk call it, like, it just, I don't see the path here. And then the GM coming, Fontenot coming out afterwards and having one of the craziest quotes I've ever seen.
Yeah, that
objectively saying 4 or 5 years is okay. Yeah. It's like, you know what you just said?
That,
you know, we're happy if he never plays it down for us.
That didn't help at all. Like, this is a defendable position that you can actually construct a solid argument around, coming out and being like, oh, it's a great problem if he doesn't play for 4 or 5 years. That's not helping. Like, you are taking a sensible argument and making it idiotic when you're saying things like that. But
I'm
like,
going to defend him for a second. Let me defend, because I seem to be carrying the Falcons' water here quite a bit these last 2 weeks. If you're the GM, like, the biggest downside to this that we've highlighted is maybe Kirk Cousins being a little fragile in this whole thing. I think if the GM's going to start, you know, taking the hit you know, taking the heat basically and take it off of Kirk Cousins with quotes like that. Like, sure, we want Kirk. Of course we want Kirk to be good for 4 years. So now they're like, hey, we made this decision. I don't know that he's going to say what he really wants to say. There's a reason why they loved him so much to take him. So he's gonna bite the bullets, basically.
I don't think you need to. You can do that without saying 4 or 5 years, though. You can just say it's a good problem if Kirk Cousins is playing great and he's sitting on the sideline. You don't have to put a timeline on it.
I'm just reading into it differently than like, oh, man, GM's an idiot, you know?
He's an idiot for saying 4 or 5 years.
That's what other people are saying, yeah.
I will say, though, if you're a self-motivated GM, you're thinking your long-term job security, he's going to be fine the next few years because they're probably going to win 9-10 games with Kirk Cousins, now a quarterback, and like a solid upcoming roster. Now you bought yourself maybe 4 or 5 more years if Michael Penix turns out good, right? But now if he doesn't, now maybe you didn't buy yourself any more years. But I do think if you're worried about your job, you probably want to be forward thinking about the quarterback position as much as possible and keep guys in tow.
And the only thing that's really different from the Rodgers, Jordan Love type of situation is the fact that Cousins is brand new in the building, right? Like, yes. Theoretically, the timeline is about the same. Otherwise, it's just that you just signed this guy. And honestly, I think that's why it's kind of understandable, right? Because it's not really 4 years, it's more like 2. And in those 2 years, Cousins is probably going to be good enough to immediately make this team the favorite for the division this year, maybe next year as well. So to me, they're kind of independent variables, right? Cousins comes in, they needed him, otherwise they were screwed. We just saw what happened when they didn't have any kind of quarterback situation. A rookie is probably going to be the same kind of thing. So they needed Cousins. They went and signed him to the deal. They got him in the building, done. Then it's like, all right, he's 35 coming off an Achilles injury, and even then he's probably not a long-term solution. So what does the future look like? Oh, it's Michael Penix. Like, those are – I think it's basically the Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers thing, except instead of Rodgers having been there for a decade already, it's like we signed this guy a week ago.
Yeah, and I think there's like 2 other big things, though, that make it different. One is that it's pick 8 versus pick, 26 that Love was, where it's like so much bigger of an investment. And for a team that, if you say they drafted Dallas Turner or say they drafted Byron Murphy, and he's like, say that guy is a franchise pass rusher, like that could boost you the same way, same sort of turnaround we saw with the Texans last year. We're like, oh, maybe you're like South Division champs and you're right in the thick of it in the NFC for the next 2 or 3 years with Kirk Cousins. Like that's very possible. But then also that Michael Penix is 24. Michael Penix is not a guy to develop on the bench. He is a guy that everyone was saying could start day one. And also a guy that could not only was like this developed prospect already, like 6 years of college football, but also a guy that was 6 years of college football and not a lot of people were saying is like a top 5 pick, right? It's like there's a difference between, oh, let's take a chance on this 21-year-old who has all the tools, who may develop into something special versus this guy who's 24 that people are, for the most part, consensus kind of was on him, or just not in consensus. I didn't see a lot of people going to bat for just being like, yeah, Michael Penix is a franchise quarterback. So I think that's a distinct difference too, that you're not taking a swing of the fence or a swing of the bat for the fences, to do a baseball analogy here that I don't even watch baseball anymore. But you're kind of just like, oh, that was a kind of a hitting a double with Michael Penix, sort of thing. He's not really a big swing of the bat at pick 8.
I think, yeah, in order for this to make sense, I think the supposition has to be that they think that there is inherent value in the development process that can take place for any young quarterback over 2 years on the bench, right? Yeah. Like the age thing at that point is kind of irrelevant. It's not like age isn't directly corresponding to where your ceiling is. It's simply we think in order to get him to a ceiling, whatever that is in the NFL, the best way of doing that is 2 years sitting on his ass on the sideline. We think he's already got the capacity to be that guy, but the first couple of years from a young quarterback is probably going to be rough. Let's smooth that curve out by putting him on the bench for 2 years. I don't care about the age thing that much because I kind of buy into that as a concept. Whether or not it's right, it's up in the air right now given the data points that we have, but I at least buy that as an argument, and at which point, because I do think that you're right. Like if they had done this for, like if Drake May had been the guy to slide a little bit and they'd done this for Drake May, I think the noise would have been half as loud, right? Because people would have gone, he's young, he's got the upside, this makes some sense. It's because it's Michael Penix Jr. that everyone's like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think that, and I do think that's the bigger thing. Or like, that's like why it's such a so questioned, because if it, like I said, if it would have been the younger upside play, yeah. But if it's not, it doesn't. It's not what this feels like, right?
I want to get it. So, what drafts did you like? I want to just get into your favorite drafts and, you know, teams that stood out to you during this whole process.
There's a handful. I really liked the Steelers draft. If you're gonna do, you know, if you're gonna buy into your OC, and that's obviously what they did in this draft. You know, they went all in on Arthur Smith's vision. I don't think they could have had really a better draft. And now they're in a uniquely situated and a great draft to do it, right? They had a great draft to load up on offensive linemen. But man, what they did the first two rounds, you know, getting a starting left tackle and a starting center who both are like perfect scheme fits from their how they can move in Troy Faiotanu and Zach Frazier for that offense. And then even further down the board, Mason McCormick, I like a lot too. It was like my favorite developmental guard in this draft class.
Same.
And then Roman Wilson's like a solid number two, I think, like just like a kind of, people call him the anti-Deontay Johnson. It's like, couldn't be more accurate. He's going to do all the little things. He's not going to drop passes. He's going to take every play seriously, you know, that sort of thing. So really a changing of the guard in Pittsburgh for sure at that position, even if, you know, he's definitely not Deontay Johnson from a pure route running perspective. And then obviously like Peyton Wilson's nasty. I think everyone had the same opinion on Peyton Wilson. It's like, yeah, if he had functioning ACLs, this guy's probably linebacker went off the board. His tape was that good, but if you can get 4 years out of him, I think he's going to be a darn good football player for them. So I thought they had a fantastic draft just all around, even for not having, you know, a ton of picks.
Or in fact, just an ACL entirely in one knee, apparently.
Yeah, that would be nice.
How is that possible?
You guys are adjacent to doctors. How bad is that?
Seattle Seahawks had a good draft, too.
Seahawks?
Like Seahawks had a really good draft, in my opinion. Now, you obviously, I feel like draft coverage skews towards anyone who has, like, more than, you know, two first rounders, five top 100 picks, every single team that has that one, except for the Packers, unfortunately. But I thought the Seahawks to go get Byron Murphy at 16, you know, who I had as top defensive player in this draft class, I thought was an awesome DT prospect. I thought that was a massive win. To get Christian Haynes, who I think is like a plug and play starting right guard in the NFL at 81, when I had him as top 50 player, I think that's, you know, maybe not the most valuable position, but I think at that point in the draft, get a starter day one, I think it's great. And then Tyrus Knight, I thought was one of the most underrated players in this class. I had him just outside my top 100. UTEP linebacker, it tested well. I think he productive as, you know, can be this past season. There wasn't a lot to dislike on his tape. So to get that guy in the fourth round, and then DJ James is top 100 player of the Auburn corner on my board. And obviously Seattle Seahawks, their history with day three corners, John Schneider, is second to none, you know, and maybe NFL history with what he's been able to do. And I thought this draft class specifically, day three corners were a great value across the board. I just thought there was too many names to fit them all in and like just stack this class. That if you're drafting a guy in the fourth or fifth this year, a lot of teams got potential starters in that range. So I thought they had, and you know, maybe not like my favorite draft, there's some definitely better drafts, but for the draft capital, pick for pick, I was a big fan of it.
DJ James was kind of a strange player. He was the guy where when Chris Sims does his top five rankings every year and it's like, oh, let's go see what Chris has done because there's going to be something insane in there. And yeah. DJ James was like his cornerback. Was he three?
Yeah.
The third overall corner.
This year's De'Ami Brown
right.
Over Jaylen Waddle.
And you're like, oh, he's off the reservation again. And at that point, I hadn't even got deep into the cornerback tape. Went and watched DJ James. You're like, okay, actually, this guy's really quite good. I had him, I think, as cornerback six in the class.
Oh, nice.
But, like, and then he doesn't actually end up going that high at all. Like, a lot of people were talking up DJ James. Actually, Chris isn't crazy. Like, this guy's really good. And then, was he the second Auburn corner taken in this draft? He wasn't even the top guy taken from that defense. Like, why did the league not see it?
Skinny. Just, what was he, 173 or something? And he's not Emmanuel Forbes coming out of, I guess Forbes like in the 160s, but he was a fifth year guy, right? Coming out at 170s, which is just, that's, you know, what you see is what you get then probably at that point. So I think that's it, but I don't know. Honestly, it didn't worry me that much. I thought he played more physical than his weight. And now weight's always going to matter, but I do think the way you play, especially at corner, as we saw, you know, the Seahawks know with Devin Witherspoon last year, it was 180 pounds came out top five pick. And then did anyone ever care that he was 180 pounds playing the slot this year? I don't think so. So, yeah, I think that's why. But man, I think that was one of the bigger steals of the draft to get him where they got him. And I think he like would play over Nehemiah Pritch in a heartbeat. Now, maybe he doesn't start right away, but I think he's very capable of doing just that.
As a Packers owner, were you happy with the direction that the Packers went? Once again, another high volume draft. There's always those picks, right? With the Packers, it's like, oh, they did a lot of good things, a lot of picks I disagree with, but there's 12 of them, so it's okay.
No, I thought this was the draft to maybe take a bigger swing. You know, maybe make a play, go up for someone that you really like. And it felt like a little too much business as usual, a little too safe. And now the players they got, especially their first three players, I think are all darn good players at their respective positions. You know, I think Jordan Morgan's going to be a Pro Bowl guard if that's where he ends up playing for the Packers. Maybe not necessarily a Pro Bowl tackle, but what I saw from him, I just reminded me of, honestly, Elgton Jenkins. That was my comp for him coming out. And when they drafted him, I was like, Packers maybe have a type. So love that pick. I think in that scheme specifically, Edgerrin Cooper was probably the best linebacker for them, especially if you weren't going to draft Peyton Wilson. And a lot of teams weren't. I obviously knew that. But he was just a flat-out playmaker, and he's going to a defense that's kind of going to just let him do that and let him play fast and have that freedom to do so now with Jeff Hafley there. So that – Javon Buller is my safety one, so I'm obviously not going to argue about that. And I think he has slot versatility, which could help the Packers because they have kind of needs at both. But then after that, it was like, whoa, what happened here? Why are we going backup running back in the third – Tyron Hopper, backup linebacker now, maybe even just special teamer in the third, a guy who I didn't see on like any top 150, and I personally didn't have in my top 150. So those, it kind of went downhill after that, let's just say. But I thought that's why I was like, if you're going to draft backups in the third, why not go up and get like a guy that you really want? And now maybe those were the guys they really wanted, but they did trade down after Cooper DeJean came off the board. So who knows if that was who they really wanted, but It was solid. It was kind of business as usual, but I do think for the draft capital, I wanted a little bit more, but I'm definitely not disappointed with this draft by any.
You mentioned Cooper Dijon there. That's the Dane official pronunciation guide. It's Cooper Mustard.
Yeah.
That's what we're going with, even though it's a ridiculous way of pronouncing that name. That's the way apparently it's supposed to be said. So what did you make of him? What do you think he is in the NFL? And do you like the fit, therefore, with the Eagles now that they snagged him in the second?
Yeah, I think he may even start over Quinyon Mitchell because I thought his game was a little more translatable to the slot than Mitchell's was. And probably that's where they have an opening. I don't think you're going to put Bradbury or Slay on the bench just yet. You're probably going to have that competition with like an Avante Maddox that could result in one of them starting. So I that's where I'd put him in that defense. Now, I thought he could play safety, too, and I thought he could play outside. But truthfully, I thought his best position was probably in the slot because of how good he was as a tackler and just, like, how his size can play, shutting down wide screens and things of that nature. So I think that's where he ends up. But, man, falling to that point in the draft, I was, like, as the draft show has gone on, it was hard for me to talk about the few picks before him because I kept checking. I'm like, okay, he's still on the board. Packers are here. Packers are 40. They have a chance. He's fallen. And then when the trade-up happened, I was like, I know what's going to happen here. It's over. So, man, Eagles also, obviously, everyone's been, you know, pumping up their draft. But business as usual for them. They just take the value that falls to them and don't pigeonhole themselves into any single position. And obviously, that's how you get, you know, maybe you didn't need two corners, but the value was for two corners. And so I thought they had another great draft.
Do you think that him sliding as far as he did is an indication that most teams don't see him as an outside corner, that actually he is now a projection to safety or the slot? And because I like the one thing that we didn't get out of his athletic testing was the change of direction stuff, right? And his certainly, I mean, it's unfair to compare anybody's change of direction skills to Terry and Arnold because his were just disgusting. But like his hip tightness, his change of directions on outside stuff compared with Arnold is night and day. And that's the one thing we didn't get a number on once he was finally medically cleared to work out. And that's the one thing that you really want from that outside corner. So you put all these pieces together and it sort of feels like actually the league doesn't think he plays outside corner. He's a projection to something else, which is why he falls, you know, 30 spots relative to where he could have gone.
Yeah, I think that's valid. And I think it's a valid takeaway that a lot of teams who either were in need of corner at that point in the draft or just passed on it for other corners, definitely were thinking that they liked other guys on the outside better or just weren't seeing him in that role. Because that's obviously going to devalue anyone if you're not thinking he can play outside corner.
Right.
How about some players? We didn't get all your player takes during draft season. Like, we wanted to have you on the show, but we had some other people we had to squeeze onto the show. The Dane Brugler's of the world, you know? So we got you on post-draft.
No, I gave you a tight window. It was my fault. I gave you a tight window when I can make it. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. You had a lot going on. But I know you mentioned to me off-air, Dominic Pooney was a guy that you loved. Who else did you just love as far as the your hot takes on players going into the draft?
Yeah, I love Pooney. I thought I missed 34th on my board. I trust guys who are coordinated the way he is. And then, like, he can move. And I think he got underrated because he looks kind of dumpy for a tackle or a guard or wherever you want to play him. Just, like, doesn't have the body type that you would ideally draft where you draft him. But he's a day one starter for the 49ers. I think it was one of my favorite picks of the draft. Him. I really like Mike Hall Jr., the Ohio State DT. The takes on him were all over the board. Some people didn't have him. DJ didn't even have him as top 100. And I was like, man,
I didn't know that.
He ran a 4.75 at 299 in his pro day. It's like, and the tape was pretty nasty. Like, he was the only guy that gave Jackson Powers Johnson any sort of trouble down at the Senior Bowl, even if, you know, JPJ got the better of him a couple times as well. But I didn't know what there wasn't to like about his game, even outside of the fact that he's only 20 years old, you know, one of the youngest DTs in this class, highest, like the best testing DT in this class as well. It's like, man, I thought the Browns got a steal in the second round. I am his top 32 player. So those two, I'm trying to think of who else I was really like going to bat for. I mean, I really like Pearsall. A lot of people were like surprised when he went in the first round. I had him in that range as like a viable first round pick. I really liked Jalen Polk as well, who I actually had him higher than Javon Baker actually had higher than Jalen Polk for the New England Patriots. I like them both, but I was really high on Javon Baker and what he could do. Him falling all the way to fourth was really surprising to me. So, is there anyone else that I was? Oh, and I was really high on Tavondre Sweat, man. I thought the Texas DT going where, like, obviously the pre-draft DWI and the weight concerns, yes, there's that. But his tape was as good as I've seen from a nose. Like, it was better than Jordan Davis's tape his last year at Georgia. It just flat out was like he was on a play for play basis more dominant, and now he's not the freak that Jordan Davis is, but he kind of is for a guy that size. You know, he still kind of is. So I was really high on him as well.
Yeah, I agree. Like, he was 15 pounds heavier than Jordan Davis at the combine. Like, he's even bigger than Jordan Davis. And okay, he didn't run like a 4.78 or whatever absurd time Jordan Davis ran, but he influences every play by just being that big, that explosive, that freaky. He was the best graded defensive tackle in the draft class last year. Like, he was as good as anybody. I agree with you. I think from an on-field point of view, he's worth that spot. The only question is, how many snaps are you going to get out of him?
That's valid. No, I mean, it's a nose tackle, but the fit also next to Jeffrey Simmons just feels like, how are you going to run? How are you going to run up the middle on those two? I was actually kind of a fan of what the Titans did. I know a lot of people weren't, but that was a tone setting. The two guys they drafted were the two strongest guys on each side of the ball. Like, that's something that is hard to kind of quantify how much that can matter when you just have an O-line, D-line that are going to control the line of scrimmage every single game. And J.C. Latham is going to control the line of scrimmage, man. I was really high on Latham. I thought he was not necessarily right there with Ault and Fashanu, because I think those are just better pass protectors. But I thought he was a guy very much worth number 7 overall pick. I think he could be special at the NFL level, especially now where he's going with Bill Callahan as his offensive line coach. He could be like, you know, top 5 OT in the NFL sort of special.
And the Titans have the most jacked quarterback in the league too, in Will Levis. So they are building a strong team. In your you're in Nashville now. You're right there. Your hometown Titans.
I am right here.
The thing about Sweat at 360 pounds. Did you like any of the other nose tackles in this draft? Like, he, not only was he the only guy that's that big, but, you know, comparing him to say a guy like a McKinley Jackson at 330, I thought Sweat's the only guy with like a true nose tackle skill set that I would trust in this draft.
100%. I didn't have anyone else with even a day 2 grade at a nose tackle. And it wasn't even close. Like, they were like all, I think the next one, I think Kenny Jackson was like right at the back end of my top 150. It's like there was just no one else. So I didn't hit. Where they drafted him was very much where I would have taken him from a pure on-field perspective.
With the success now of the international player pathway, are you now scouting rugby alongside, so you're clued up with those draft
takes?
Good question. Thank you.
No, but I did get my hands on CFL tape this past year. It was the very first, the guy was the Quintez Stiggers, the first guy I ever watched CFL tape on. And CFL, hopefully the last. That was a wild ride.
Whatever
they're doing up there.
Do you know?
That ain't football.
Do you know who one of the star cornerbacks in the CFL is right now?
I do not.
Gary Peters. Gary Peters, Clemson, class of 2015, a star. A star in the CFL. So for the second time. Second time in a couple weeks. Another victory lap. As I said.
You can't take a victory lap on that.
Yeah. As I said. One of the best corners in the class of 2015, and it has been proven in the CFL.
In order for him to be viable, he has to play in a league that has rules that look like a cartoon drew them up. It's ridiculous.
He really just needed the rules for off-field
contact
exploits.
Oh, that
to allow him.
Well, also, you know,
I believe
he's also the guy. You know, the most famous
allegedly
the thing that he's most famous for.
What?
He is the guy on that meme from the corner who's like, you know, giving it pre-snap. He's like,
you know,
and then gets wrecked by the wide receiver. That's Grabby Peters. I'm going to hit Mike.
He's not. He can't be as bad as the two guys the Packers drafted that. But they draft Quinn Rollins and
Demaryius Randall.
Safety guy.
Demaryius Randall.
Yeah, Randall.
Mike,
there you go.
I'm going to ask you the question that I got asked that is since you're now a Canadian football expert. I got asked this on a radio hit after the draft. I'm curious how you would answer it. The Detroit Lions drafted Giovanni Manu from the University of British Columbia. And the radio station I was on is curious how you think that now being on the line of scrimmage, not a yard off the line of scrimmage, is that going to help or hinder his pass sets at this level?
It's probably going to hinder. He's a little big dude. Probably needs a little more space. That was, though, the first pick in the draft where I was like, I haven't seen him.
Yeah,
obviously, lasted until day three, but there's always a few where I was just like, dude, I didn't recognize the name
right.
A little. Did not have him in my pre-draft process.
I think it was the second year in a row that the Lions did that. They're round three and round five the last couple of years.
They had Broderick Martin.
Broderick Martin, the nose
three.
Tackle, last year.
From
and then
WKU, yeah.
Yeah, and then Colby Sorsdahl in the fifth round.
Okay, yeah.
That were like a little,
know.
They were more under the radar. Look, the Lions have drafted great the last few years. Just saying, they've drafted a few more of the under the radar prospects in rounds 3 through 5.
I mean, it doesn't get much more under the radar than the University of British Columbia for a giant offensive tackle prospect.
Some people scout those schools heavily, and they're probably right on point.
I'm not fascinated to see where he was in his rankings.
With those guys. You got anything else from Mike here on the 24 draft? I want to ask a little bit about 25 briefly, because I know you did some preview stuff on 25. I didn't prep you for this at all.
No, I got 25 takes.
But it was going to be broad. Do you have anything else, Sam?
No, now that I've got his CFL analysis, I'm good.
So first look, I think when we look back at this draft, it was a good draft, right? All these offensive players, I thought it was high-value positions. Like all of if you're into positional value, this was – high-end prospects at every position and a ton of quarterbacks, of course. Next year looks like it's D-line heavy, and the quarterback class is an absolute mess. It's all over the place. It's going to be a completely different draft class. What are your initial takes on 25?
Yeah, so how I would describe this past year is I thought there were more blue-chip, like, almost can't-miss sort of prospects in the top, let's say, 15 than most years. Like, it was heavy in terms of those guys. The top 75 was really good. The top from 75 to 100, I thought it was kind of whatever. Like, and I thought like the depth back into the back end of day three was like bad, actually. Like you didn't have a lot of guys filling out. After my top 150, I was like, yikes, these are not. So that was kind of how I felt about this. This upcoming one, though, corners, like the defensive class is awesome. Corners, some safeties, but mostly corners and DTs already are strong classes. And like strong to where I would just be very surprised if we're not talking about, you know, 3 to 4 top 10 to 12 corners already. 3 or 4 guys who like probably would have been ahead of my top corner in this bachelor's class. I had Quinion Mitchell's top corner, like 3 or 4 guys already I'm seeing on tape. I'm like, yeah, I think they're probably gonna be better prospects than Quinion Mitchell. And then D DTs, there could be like three or so guys, at least a couple that I already are up there that I'd put in, could be in the mix for like, Quinion Mitchell, or excuse me, why can't I think of any names? Quinion Williams. The Qs are really messing me up there. Quinion Williams sort of prospect with what I've seen from that tape. So I like the defense side of the ball a lot more. Quarterback, wide receiver, tight end are kind of iffy. Like the playmaking prospects on offense and even like running back, I'm not super enthused with this far out. So the offense, it's going to be, people are thinking like, oh, 14 straight offensive players, is that a trend? I think it's going to flip next year.
Do you have early takes on Shedeur Sanders?
I like him. I think he's far more polished than he's like given credit for. And I think there's a lot to like about his game. Takes a lot of sacks though. Takes a lot of negative plays. There's obviously things that need to improve, but he wasn't really working with that much talent, right? This past year at Colorado. So I was impressed. If he would have come out, I probably would have had him. I would have had him outside after every of the six quarterbacks that got drafted, right? I don't would not have had him in the, as a first rounder, but he's gotten better every year. I think like there is a lot to like about his game. So he's athletic, good enough arm, not a great arm, but definitely good enough. So, but there's no one that I'm putting in next year's class that's even, I wouldn't put a first round grade on any of those guys. And obviously that's why you see a lot of them come back to school already.
I think he could be really, really good. Now, I don't know if they're going to give him the talent to show that next year. Like, it might be more of the same, given what's happening. But it's just he's now a fascinating guy, aside from anything else, because of the Deion and the off-field and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to dislike him because that entire family just seems like a pain in the ass now. And it's like nothing more than to watch his tape and be like, nah, he's garbage, doesn't matter, next. I watch the tape. I'm like, oh no, he's really good. Like, I'm actually gonna have to buy into this. So yeah, if they give him some help on the offensive line in particular, I think that could fix a lot of the problems. You know, you take away some of the sack problem and all that kind of thing with a better group of pass blockers. Don't know if that's going to be possible this year, but I think he's got really high end ability.
No, yeah, I mean, we saw like Jaden Daniels once he got pass protection. It's like, oh, now he's a dude, right? And because he was, so many sacks in the years prior. I think that's a similar thing with Sanders. It's like, oh, if he just had the pass protection, because he's good at extending plays, when it's like one guy coming free, when it's the whole pocket's collapsing around him, obviously he tries to do it too much, but good at extending plays and he's accurate outside the pocket and he's really good with his footwork inside the pocket as well. So there is a lot to like if for all the haters. Like he has a lot of NFL things in his favor, and it's not just like, a pure playmaker like his father, like freelancing. No, it's like there's a lot in structure about the quarterback position that he is fantastic at already. So there will end up being, I don't think it's going to end up being 2022 where we're on draft day being like, okay, all these guys think someone is going to take a leap. And I also like Noah Fapita, the Arizona quarterback, to get in that mix. I think he's super talented as well.
Just so you guys know, you're now on the Shedeur hater list. You guys said some very nice things about him, but you did not lock him in at number one overall. You didn't put a first-round grade on him. It might be exhausting quote-tweeting all of the negativity that comes Shadur's way in the next year, but you guys are going to be at the forefront of it. This is going to go out onto social media. It's going to get back to the Sanders family, and you're going to be number one on the hater list for now.
No,
because
not
you
number
didn't...
one.
You're gonna be
on the list. There's no way we're number one.
You're gonna be on the list.
Yeah.
You're be
on he definitely list. Doesn't bring any of it on himself either. I'll say. It's all externally generated.
Do you see the tweet? Deion went on his quote tweeting spree. I forget who it was. I can't give credit to this. I wish I could because it was funny. Somebody quote tweeted him with a big long assassination of Deion's current career and rounded it out by saying, "You're LeVar Ball with a headset," which I thought was pretty outstanding takedown.
LeVar Ball with a headset. If you get a LeVar Ball comp, it's tough to come back.
It's not good for you.
Last thing, Travis Hunter. Early take on Travis Hunter. Can he be a two-way player? What does he look like for the next level?
So everyone wants to put him at corner, and I think that's where he's better. I don't know why he wouldn't just play wide receiver, though. Like, you see the wide receiver contracts. I think he's good enough. Like, I think he'd be a first-round wide receiver, too. If you're a first-round wide receiver, I'd probably play wide receiver.
Can he?
It's probably more fun too, and you probably can make more off the field if you're a wide receiver.
Can he? Can he force the NFL to consider him as a two-way player, like as a legitimate double, like Iron Man two-way starter? Because I think a big part of why that doesn't happen is you just like, there's no way anybody could deal with that. And yet he was playing 100 plus snaps a game, like 150 snaps a game, not coming off the field for anything other than special teams, than kickoffs. Like, that's ridiculous.
I could see him being like, throw him in on third downs.
Right.
But you can, like, the way he was playing special, like, his tape was at times legitimately not good because he was tired. Like, he was playing too many snaps and he got cooked at times.
So he got hurt.
I do think you can't do both full time, but it wouldn't surprise me if with a guy with that skill set, so I say he is wide receiver, yeah, throw him in on third downs. To play corner because he's that good and like that, like sees the game that well. I don't think there's necessarily not skill. Everyone needs to develop skill no matter what you are going from college to the pros. But like, I think he can handle both the knowledge of knowing an offense and knowing the defense from what I've seen.
Yeah, it feels like you would have to prove it before you could declare yourself, hey, I'm special. Like Shohei, you're going to get all the Shohei comps. Shohei's literally worth two players, which is why he signed that huge deal with the Dodgers. We've never seen anything like it. Even Deion, who was a Hall of Fame corner, would play, 10, 15, 20 snaps at receiver. For our young listeners, Deion did play elite corner and then went in and was kind of a change of pace, you know, third down type of receiver, gimmicky receiver.
And baseball.
And he played baseball. Often in the same day, he would helicopter, you know, from Falcons to Braves games, which is another thing. Man, like, unbelievable. Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson playing NFL and MLB. Brian Jordan did the same thing with the Braves and the Falcons. That stuff's unbelievable. We need more of that. We need more crazy, you know, feats of human athleticism in our life. Anyway, do you got anything else? Anything else you want to unload here on the PFF NFL podcast, Mike?
Well, I just want to give my Noah Fifita Arizona QP
his
QB1 take for next year's draft. The guy is going to be Kyler Murray. He's like 5'9", but he has a hose, and he's the most fun player to watch college football. He just slings it down the football field. So go watch some Arizona games this next year. It's going to be fun. Because they might have the wide receiver one in the class, too, in Taitaroa McMillan. He's like 6'5", got great body control. So Arizona's a fun team to watch.
Big 12 after dark? Are they Big 12 now? Got to keep track
of up. I'll figure that one out.
I think they're in the Big 12.
Week zero.
But yeah, rest in peace, Pac-12, like legitimately. There's always some QB that emerged. Like Joe Burrow was not on the radar. Kyler Murray was not on the radar. Michael Penix Jr. was on the radar, but certainly not in the top 10. So every year there will be some quarterback usually that emerges. Kenny Pickett, you know, came out of nowhere after a three-year average starter, became a, you know, an elite starter his last year. So Fifita's your guy to do that next year?
Yes. And it might take him a couple of years, and obviously he's tiny, but I think so. I think he's nasty.
Nice. Well, Mike, we appreciate it. You know, best of luck this afternoon with your appointment as well. And, of course, it's CBS Sports. And appreciate you announcing it here. That's awesome. Congrats again on the new gig in a few weeks here.
Thank you for giving me your massive platform to announce my next deal. And thanks for having me, guys.
Of
really
course.
Appreciate it.
Cheers, anytime. Mike. Thanks, Mike. We'll see you. The great Mike Renner.
No longer the late Michael Renner.
He was here.
Now he's late again because he's left.
No, he's gone. No, that was good.
Yeah.
It's not easy extracting a whole hour out of Mike. He's not as long-winded as we are.
Pull
it out of him.
Despite being part of this show, you know, Mike's got this show's DNA within him. And yet none of the long-windedness. It's crazy.
Every time we gave him the reins on the show, and there was a couple, there's the dark days when we had to hand it over to Mike and let him host and let him run the show. It was like, no, we got to do an hour. We said, no, we get too much to say. We want to do 2 hours, 2.5 hours, whatever it might be. Now, I always love Mike's football takes and excited to see what the future holds for him over at CBS.
Yeah, it sounds like a great opportunity for him. It's awesome to see him back on a big platform. And sky's the limit, young Michael.
Yeah. You got anything else?
No, I think
you're on vacation. You're just taking the rest of the week off.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I'm on my own. So we're programming note again. We're just going to go Monday, Thursday going forward. We do have to review our draft predictions and bets. Do you want me to do that on my own on Thursday?
I just think there's some comic value to Big Goofy doing a solo show, reading out things. from people.
So I have a note out to our friend Greg Rosenthal. If he doesn't get back to me, I might just fly solo on Thursday.
And look, what's the worst that could happen, you know?
What if the numbers tank? That could hurt my ego.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the worst thing that could happen is it's a terrible show and we never do it again.
I need a good title, because the title is what captures people.
What brings them in?
Yeah. Just say mock draft or something.
I just, you know, send in your questions for Big Goofy and we'll see what he does.
And maybe so, I'll just unload the algorithm for the model.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For 30 to 45 minutes. Uh-huh. So carry the wand and...
You just go. You know, you, Bill Burr, it's only the very most talented people that can do solo podcasts.
Solo
pod. You know, by themselves, just rambling.
Colin Cowherd, right? So there's an art to it.
Right.
You have to speak extra slow so that it takes a little more time.
Burr doesn't do that, I don't think.
And what you do, yeah, but he's just really good and smooth.
Yeah.
And what you do is you present a question. You almost have to present questions to yourself.
You have to act as both sides of the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might ask, how do you project players to the NFL level? All right. I've got answers for you.
See, you can do it.
Answer. Yeah, so you get into it.
Yeah. You can fly solo.
I did it a couple of years ago. I did our O-line rankings. I flew through like the top 32 teams or something all by myself. That cooked. That did well. So we'll see what we do. Big surprise coming on Thursday for all of us.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going to happen. Anyway.
Might tune in from the couch.
Thank you. Is it a staycation for you?
Yeah.
Just hanging.
No, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just not working.
Just doing nothing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I might have to fix a bunch of the stuff in my yard, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I took Friday off to do chores around the house.
Oh, yeah?
And I didn't do the right ones, apparently. Kelly was not pleased. She was not pleased. She was like, here's a list of stuff we need to get done. And I did all the stuff that wasn't on the list. It was a lot of stuff, but not on the list. Mm-hmm. So make sure you do the right stuff.
Okay.
That's my suggestion.
Cool.
All right, that's it. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again on Thursday with more PFF.